Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Who do you want to run for governor? A new poll offers some suggestions and one name has already dropped out. That is what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
The far left Northwest Progressive Institute asked 874 Washington voters if the 2024 gubernatorial election were held today, who would you vote for? Now, it wasn't an open-ended question. You didn't get to fill in the blank. The people who were asked were given a set of names that have been put out there as potential candidates. Amongst them, Republican Bruce Dammeyer. He, of course, is the Pierce County executive. And Democrats Dow Constantine, Bob Ferguson, and Hillary Franz. Hillary Franz is in charge of our forests. She gets lost on hikes, and she tells us about it. Bob Ferguson is our attorney general who likes to file frivolous lawsuits and then brag about them. And then Dow Constantine, King County executive, who is an utter failure, but he's a Democrat, so it's guaranteed that he'll stay in office. The poll revealed 35% would pick Dammeyer, 21% would pick Ferguson, and 7% would back Constantine, and 7% Franz. Now, someone might say, whoa, that's good for Dammeyer, right? It's great. It's not. It's very low. You have one Republican, and all the rest are Democrats. Those Democrats who vote for, let's say, going into the primary, picked Dow Constantine. And it ends up being Dammeyer and Ferguson. And of this group, that's what it would be. All those Democrats are just going to go for whoever the Democrat nominee is. In that case, Ferguson. They're not going to suddenly switch. So, you know, I love the extremism of Dow Constantine, but he wasn't the choice that went through. So I'll go with the Republican. That's not how they vote. Now, for those of the people who voted for Dow Constantine, they would be very disappointed right now because he just announced that he is not running for governor. He pretends that he's got a whole lot of other work that he's really passionate about doing for the county and that it doesn't make sense for him to drop out and spend all of his time fundraising for a gubernatorial campaign that he's not going to be able to win against Bob Ferguson. So he made the announcement according to an email that was obtained by our sister station, Cairo News Radio. He is not going to run. Hillary Franz, she will be running. This is, of course, assuming Jay Inslee does not. She's going to run. Bob Ferguson is 100% running. He has been running for governor for 6 years, probably. That's what he wants to do. Everything he's done in the attorney general's office, basically so that he can campaign on when he runs for governor. Again, this is if Jay Inslee does not run for another term. He is old and meandering. I have to assume he's disinterested at this point. Otherwise, I think he would give some hints that he was going to run. The poll had some surprises, I suppose. I would argue that this is a poll, even though that Dammeyer did 35%, why did he do so well? Because there was only one Republican. Why did he do so well in counties that presumably have never heard of him? Because he's the only Republican. That's the only reason. I like Bruce Dammeyer. Again, out of that list, I would back Bruce Dammeyer in a heartbeat. King County numbers say Constantine did twice as well as the statewide numbers at 14%. But Ferguson was still the top Democrat with 20%. That's likely why Dow Constantine announced that he wasn't going to run. Not this particular poll, but he knew he had no shot in the world at beating Bob Ferguson. Do you think anyone in Spokane or Battleground or Republic knows who Dow Constantine is? No, they have no clue. Dow Constantine is barely known outside of King County. But that's the same problem with Bruce Dammeyer. But again, Republicans generally vote for another Republican. So if it were to be Dammeyer as the candidate for governor, he would have to spend a lot of money on the east side of the state. Eastern and Central Washington voted for him in big numbers. He got 50% of the support, again, because he's a Republican. And again, with all due respect to Bruce Dammeyer, no one knows who you are in Yakima. right? They just don't know who you are. And they shouldn't really know who you are. You're the Pierce County executive. The Olympic Peninsula in Southwest Washington, they went with Ferguson at 15%. Constantine and Franz got 8%, but the big winner, of course, Republican district, Bruce Dammeyer at 42%. Now, for any Republican to win, you're going to have to get about 15 to 20% of the vote in King County. You have to. And you have to outperform in all the places where you're expected to do well. That's the only way a Republican wins a statewide office. And I do think we're going to need someone who's either an exceptional campaigner or someone who already has high name recognition in order to beat Bob Ferguson. That's just the truth. That's the unfortunate reality. Bob Ferguson right now is a shoo-in to win the governor's race. 100% he will be our next governor, unless we get someone with very high name recognition. And I don't know if any exists here in Washington that I can think of that would even be interested in running, right? I don't know any. Maybe Howard Schultz comes out and says, actually, I'm a Republican, I'm running. Maybe. But he's not really a Republican, so we're not going to do anything with him. There's a lot of good names, I think, from the Republican side, and maybe you've got some suggestions on who you would like to see run for governor, and you can text them to 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. We got one from the 206 that says he wants he or she wants Jim Walsh to run, state representative from Aberdeen. I love Jim Walsh. He's not going to be able to win unless he would step up, raise a lot of money, and start campaigning now. But the names I came up with that I like, Tiffany Smiley, I asked her if she was going to run. She said no. And then I asked her off the air, come on, are you really not going to run? And she said no. So I'm going to take her at face value. You've got Nadine Woodard, the Republican mayor of Spokane. I think she's a really good name. You've got State Rep Drew Stokesbury. I think he's a really good potential candidate. You've got Reagan Dunn, King County Council member, who's going to be on the show in the 5 o'clock hour. I think he would be a really good candidate as well. And if you want to go kind of down the middle and get someone that even a Republican could at least support or at least convince themselves that it's right to support, Cassie Franklin. If she wasn't erring her deputy mayor and us pretending that that's a big deal when it's clearly not, she just got to get married. If she gets married, that ends the poor guy. She's going to say, look, we're just going to go, well, let's get divorced. You can live a separate life. We're just going to have to get married. We'll end this silly controversy of me hooking up with my deputy mayor. But she, at least from a political standpoint, she's reasonable for a Democrat. By Democrat standards, she's a reasonable Democrat. She's a liberal, but she's not a progressive. And on the issues that we care about the most, I like her. I could see myself voting for her, not over a Republican, obviously, but it's going to be most likely two Democrats going up against each other. Would you vote for Cassie Franklin over Bob Ferguson?
Probably, yeah.
You wouldn't vote for Bob Ferguson.
At least I know Franklin likes to have fun.
I know. She doesn't look like she does. She kind of looks like a marm a little bit. Like, she would definitely not have fun, but turns out she got fun. In the office, at least. Why are we making... Stop letting me do that. Well, you always lead me down that road. I feel bad that it's...
a pertinent
no,
story.
No, it's not. I think...
But she's been on the show. That's like how you know Cassie she's down Franklin. The middle.
Yeah, I'm saying she's down the middle. I like Cassie Franklin, though. I'm legitimately a fan of Cassie Franklin. Someone who, even though I disagree with her politically overall, who can just be honest enough. For the same thing, I like Mark Mullett, the state senator from Issaquah, Democrat. He and I disagree on stuff. We agree on other stuff, and he's able to have, you know, civil conversations. Doesn't say no when we put out a request. I mean, when we go through the Democrat communications director, they just ignore us and don't even tell Mark. And then I call Mark. I'm like, hey, you're not responding to our request. Like, I didn't even know you put in a request.
Oh, that's what happened?
It's 100% what happens.
I'm not stunned, but yeah. I didn't know that for a fact.
That's why I always tell you, Go directly to the staff members of the Democrats. They'll ignore us, too, but it's better than going through the one communications person for the Democrat caucus who just tells everyone not to go on our show. So just don't go through him anymore. It's a him, right? I think.
Hard to say. I'll check the email signature because it's definitely there.
Is it? Okay, yeah. Take me through the personal pronouns. What if they do they? We definitely won't know. Push the button.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies. The big weekend release is a superhero sequel, Shazam, Fury of the Gods. Billy Batson, a.k.a. Shazam, he is back as a foster kid who finally finds the family he's been looking for. But now, having shared the magical powers he acquired in the first film, his family joins him on a bunch of superhero adventures. This time, of course, he's going to need that help as he takes on the daughters of the mythical god Atlas, played here by Helen Mirren and Lucy Liu. They were able to restore their powers that were stolen to them by the humans so they can go back to their realm. But one of the sisters has a particular mean streak in her, and she wants humans to pay for stealing the powers to begin with.
The daughters of Atlas are coming to hunt us.
Children stole the power of the gods. You ripped it from our father's core.
Okay, I feel like maybe I should be writing all this down.
Give us the powers, child.
Your world will not survive this.
You want these powers? Come get them! Hey, Khaleesi!
Started from the bottom, now we're here.
All right.
Started from the bottom, now the whole team here.
We have one job to do. Save the world.
So if you like the first Shazam, you're going to get pretty much the same style of film, the same mood, the same directing, and the same, let's say, just tone. This is a movie that if you like the first one, you're going to be as pleased this time around. DC Films, I think, have not done a particularly good job of mixing humor and action the way that the Marvel movies, at least they used to be able to do. But Shazam, I think, has been the exception. It was certainly the case in the first film. It's doubly the case here. The first one, ironically, did not have Shazam as the most interesting character to me. And the same is true in the sequel, where he's just not the most interesting character in the film. And once again, and maybe even more so this time around, the best friend, played by Jack Dylan Grazer, he steals this movie. His performance is outstanding. He is really, really good at being sarcastic as well as vulnerable. What works best, I think, for Shazam, Fury of the Gods, is it's endearing. It's as endearing as the first one. And I remember saying this about the first film. It has a heart, and it didn't lose its heart in the sequel. Remember, all of these kids in the movie, they're fighting for a family as foster kids. And they're fighting for that family as strongly as they're fighting to save the world. And so the emotional attachment that you have to these characters is pretty much built in because of the scenario that they're in. Now, it is a bit busy with the CGI. I'm not entirely sure the sort of the pre-climax war scene works as well as it should. But the film flies by because this is entertaining filmmaking. And it feels the way a comic book movie should feel. Shazam! Fury of the Gods is out now, and I definitely recommend it, somewhat surprisingly so. Check it out. If you're not going to see this, what movie will you see this week? And send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The Biden administration.
Hunter Biden's lawyers admitted the laptop belonged to Hunter Biden. Sort of, maybe, kind of. They walked it back initially. Now they're coming out again claiming it's his, maybe sort of, kind of. This coming out of a counter lawsuit filed against the computer repair shop owner who had previously sued Hunter Biden for defamation because they kept claiming that he illegally obtained the data on the laptop. We're talking about John Paul Mac Isaac. Too many names in one. They're all first names.
Got four of them.
Four first names.
That's a ton of first names.
John Paul Mac Isaac. Now, the lawyers for Hunter Biden says he had no legal right to copy and distribute any of the information on the laptop. They say it's private information. So they're accusing him of 6 counts of invasion of privacy, including conspiracy to obtain and distribute the data. They wrote in their 42-page lawsuit, as a result of Mac Isaac's unlawful agreement and his conspiracy with others, Mr. Biden's personal data was made available to third parties and then ultimately to the public at large, which is highly offensive, causing harm to Mr. Biden and his reputation. You see, before this, he was known as a druggie who used his father's name for profit. And now he's known as a druggie who used his father's name for profit, but also lied about the laptop. And that's where the lawsuit, I'm sure, is going to come down to. The object of invading Mr. Biden's privacy and disseminating his data was not for any legitimate purpose, but to cause harm and embarrassment to Mr. Biden. That line is going to come to haunt them if they actually use that as a legal argument in court. This 100% has a legitimate purpose. The whole argument is that Hunter Biden was using his actual father, who was in a position of power, to gain privilege, to gain a leg up, and to sort of trade information potentially with our adversaries, specifically China. Of course, that's a legitimate issue to point out ahead of an election. This wasn't done post-election. Remember, this was done before the election. The intent was to highlight who Joe Biden is and what his family's all about and the corruption that is alleged to be there. That is totally legitimate when we're talking about him potentially becoming the president. Now, if they did it afterwards and it was just to go after Hunter Biden, maybe you could make that argument. I don't know if that's a legal argument that would work, but at least it's a more good faith argument. Now, the laptop was abandoned. Remember, he dropped it off at this computer shop in Delaware, never picked it up. And so it now belongs to Mac Isaac. He has a signed receipt from Hunter Biden. And on the receipt, it says any property that's not picked up after 90 days end up getting forfeited. But Hunter Biden's lawyers keep pretending otherwise. They write in the Times covering this story, Hunter Biden does not concede in his lawsuit that he dropped off the laptop, received an invoice, or neglected to pick it up. That's funny. Come on. In response to such claims by Mac Isaac, the filing states, quote, Mr. Biden is without knowledge sufficient to admit or deny the allegations. How shameful do these people have to be in order to put that in this legal document, in this court document? This is not an admission by Mr. Biden that Mac Isaac or others, in fact, possessed any particular laptop containing electronically stored data belonging to Mr. Biden. Rather, Mr. Biden simply acknowledges that at some point, Mac Isaac obtained electronically stored data, some of which belonged to Mr. Biden. Oh, yeah, which ones? What belonged to him? What didn't belong to him? Did he steal the laptop? Did Mac Isaac steal the laptop? Did someone else steal the laptop and then give it to him? Now, if that's what they argue, I bet you Mac Isaac's lawyers hope that's what they argue. Because if someone else stole the laptop and gave it to Mac Isaac, under these circumstances, you can probably make an argument that you're a whistleblower or even an independent journalist. So the way the law works, let's say someone steals, and by steal, I mean, let's just say some employee with the city of Seattle. They're not supposed to download a memo that's supposed to be kept private, but they did it and they gave it to me. Or they illegally recorded someone speaking, the mayor saying horrible things about the Seahawks. That'd be a great story. So I hate that Geno. Russell was way better. And someone recorded that illegally and then they gave it to me. Giving it to me might get them in trouble. Doesn't get me in trouble. I can still report on it. I can still air it. I can still post it online. I can do whatever it is I want with it, so long as it's within the law. Them stealing it has no bearing on anything related to me. Unless I told them to steal it, right? Then I would not be able to do anything with it, but I would be covered otherwise. And I do wonder that if they end up making that argument, he can just come out and say, no, I was just reporting this independently because no one else was. Where did I go to report it? I went on Fox News. I literally went to a news station to discuss this. And I talked about it in the media. He wrote a book. He could say it was part of my journalism. He can literally do any of that. Make that as an excuse or a legal claim, a legal defense. I would buy it. Not the book. I meant I would buy the argument. God knows I'm not going to buy his book. My God.
You don't read anybody's books.
That's not true. I read books all the time. I just don't read bad books. That's fair. You think it's a great book? You think John Paul Mac Isaac wrote a great book?
No.
Come on. That's not even, let's say I interviewed him because I don't even know if the book came out yet. You know how sometimes I'll say to the author, I read this book or I want to read this book. I'm not lying. I might put on a little bit of a butt kissing to the person just out of just being polite. They are giving me their time, but I'm legitimate. On that one, I wouldn't say that. So you got a book out. Get it wherever books are sold. I won't even say you can get it wherever fine books are sold, which doesn't make
it. Is that the line you use?
Since it used to be like the line all the time, wherever fine books are sold or wherever fine blah, blah, blah is sold. As opposed to what? If you're buying the book.
I want to buy average books. Where do I buy average books?
Yeah, I want to buy books where average books are sold. No, I'm assuming Walmart?
They still have bookstores?
Costco? There's a Barnes & Noble. I said this the other day. There's a Barnes & Noble in Seattle, North Seattle. I don't know of any. Maybe there's one in Tukwila.
There's one in Totem Lake.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah. It's actually kind of nice.
Well, no,
well,
the funny
thing is,
it's
just a big Starbucks, but yeah.
But the thing is, I'm at a point where every once in a while, I want to go to a bookstore. Like, I want to look at what books are available.
Nerd.
But you can't do that anymore. You have to go on Amazon, and you're scrolling mindlessly until you see something that's interesting to you. But if you're like, I'm kind of curious what a book is that maybe I didn't know about. It's not necessarily new, so I'm not going to go in the new release section. I'll just go down the politics aisle or the travel aisle or the cookbook aisle, whatever it is. So let's say you are looking for a cookbook, for example. Well, you're probably going to want to look at it in person before you go ahead and purchase it from Amazon.
You literally want to go in person to judge books by their cover.
By their cover, yeah. But I'd open it.
It's fair.
That's all.
And their contents.
The funny thing is when there were bookstores, I would complain because they're so expensive when buying it at a bookstore. So then I would take a photo at the Barnes & Noble and then just buy it online. So I would go. If I'm already in the area,
you're the worst.
I would go to the bookstore, I would find the books I want, take photos, and then just buy them on Amazon and have them shipped to me for free in 2 days.
You're literally the worst.
I was part of the reason why Barnes & Noble went under. Didn't everyone do that? Doesn't everyone do that?
I don't do that.
You're such a liar. You don't do that version. Like if you're at a Best Buy or something and you're looking at a Blu-ray, you want to see where it's
well,
cheaper.
Oh, well, yeah, but not with
Same
books.
Thing. Well, what's the difference?
Best Buy sells TVs and stuff.
So?
More interesting than some boring book.
Oh, just because you don't read. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. The IRS continues to be aggressive. They're increasing the number of officers in Washington State. So don't try to take on the IRS yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. He will help. N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution.
Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. Online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle and instead we focus on all of the communities you live in and care about most. We start at Smoky Point. We're at a place where we're finally being honest about a story, frankly, that I covered, I want to say about a year ago. But there's a new report out coming from the Washington State Department of Transportation, WashDOT. It's a report that looks at homeless encampments or RVs taking over the right-of-way. And they say that Smoky Point, the rest area, was closed because of the RVs that had taken over. And the Herald, citing a statement report on the encampments in this right-of-way document, they say it was one of 281 encampments identified between 2015 and September 2022 on Washington State Department of Transportation right-of-ways in Snohomish County. So Snohomish County had 281. Now, you might think, well, that's a lot. No, King County is at 922. Snohomish County was number two, but number one was King County at 922. Conditions at encampments, they report, included propane tanks and hypodermic needles. And unfortunately, it kept WashDOT employees from reaching traffic signals and other infrastructure, meaning they weren't able to do their jobs. They still got paid, by the way, but they weren't able to do their jobs because of the homeless encampments. Cost to clean up these sites in 2008 was about $200,000. Okay. $200,000 in 2008 to clear and clean these encampments on state right of ways. What do you think was the number last year? We obviously know it went up. But how much did it go? So we're at $200,000. Where do you think it was at?
$500,000.
No, keep going.
$5 million.
No, go down.
$600,000.
How did you go from $5 million and then you went all the way back down to $600,000?
Because you said go down.
Well, yeah.
I found the floor.
Well, no, the floor would not have been $600,000.
Well, whatever.
It could have been $501,000. It's $2.8 million.
Okay.
$2.8 million. It went from $200,000 to $2.8 million just to clean up these encampments. They say the state normally relies on volunteers or incarcerated people for litter cleanup. But this isn't an option for encampments, which require a contractor or a state employee, according to Roger Millar. He is the secretary of WSDOT. Now, why put together this report? That was my question. Why did they put together this report? Now, on the surface, you would say, well, they're putting together this report because they want to point out that they've got a lot of work to do in cleaning these encampments and maybe they need more money. 2.8 is just not enough. No, that's not why. I actually don't know why they did this report. I know that they don't want to clear encampments, so that can't be a reason for this report. Roger Millar, at a hearing this week or a meeting this week, reminded us that when it comes to homelessness, there's a reason why it's so bad on Washington State property. He doesn't believe in sweeps.
When we got started, it was like, well, get them off the right-of-way. Well, if we sweep them off the right-of-way, they're going to go downtown, and then the city's going to sweep them back to the right-of-way. And, you know, I told the governor, I did not want to participate in a game of homeless person whack-a-mole. These are people.
Oh, they're people.
That we need to take care of.
They're people we need to take care of, so we're going to let them stay on the right-of-way, surrounded by used needles. That's what he just said.
What would you want done for your child or your mom? Because some of the people, seniors, single seniors, uh-huh, in these encampments, and yeah, and people with, you know, with much children, single parents, and jobs, living homeless. It's really got just a horrific thing.
Yeah. That represents maybe 1% of the homeless population. Again, they lie intentionally. They're using these people as leverage for like basically free housing, subsidized housing. They believe ideologically that housing is a human right. So they'll tell you to get you to really truly think that housing is unaffordable, which to them, of course, is unaffordable. They're homeless. No, they work. They work. Some of them, they work, they got kids, and they're living homeless. Okay, let's go with that for a moment. How long have they been homeless? Oh, some of them for years. What are they doing with the money? They work. Where's all the money going? It's not going to rent. Now it goes to some of the basics for survival, right? For food, clothing. Okay. Where's the other money going? Where's it going? Well, you're not saving any of it? Or is it going to... That's a drug route. You get it? Because the cocaine?
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, because I can't do...
That's good sound theater.
Yeah, I couldn't do fentanyl smoking. Because then it'd just be like a lighter. And then some guy going like this. And then going like this. Because he falls over.
I like that one.
Where's the money going? We know that they're lying. We know that a huge group of these folks, the majority of them are dealing with drug addiction, alcohol addiction, or a mental health issue. He says, well, what would you want to do with your mother or your kid? You're saying you want to keep your mother and kid out on a right-of-way? You don't want to bring them indoors? Or is it like,
that's there's compassion.
Shelter, there's shelter space right now. You can go into a shelter bed. Well, they don't want it. They don't want to follow the rules. Okay, so what? Then, okay, we did our part. We tried. But the truth is, you've got a bunch of garbage out there that's preventing WSDOT employees from doing their jobs. Except don't call it garbage. One man's garbage is another man's treasure. Or is it the reverse? In any case, WSDOT Assistant Secretary Mark Greibner said it's not trash to them.
First of all, some of the things that may be perceived as garbage may not be garbage to the residents. And so we have to, you know, there's always some consideration on
I mean, that's just a bunch. I know it looks like a bunch of broken down bikes, but those stolen bikes are their property. Well, I mean, they're stolen bikes to them are their property. It's not, well, it's confusing, but you get my point, right? It's not just garbage.
But and how things are sorted and disposed of. So we have to be very careful there.
Yeah, we got to be so careful. You could just clean it up. You choose not to. You can move them into shelter. You choose not to. You're waiting for that studio apartment with... You're waiting for a studio apartment with a view of the Space Needle. Until you get that, or we'll give you Mount Rainier. Until you get that, you're not interested. Meanwhile, King 5 is reporting that police departments are increasing patrols after a string of residential burglaries in Bellevue, Mercer Island, Redmond, and some of the other surrounding areas. Tom lives in Redmond. And he tells King 5 he's worried about someone breaking into his home.
Quite honestly, every night, you just wonder whether you're going to be safe in your own home.
Huh. This is Redmond. About a decade ago. You don't even actually have to go that far. 5 years ago? Didn't really hear comments like that from people living in Redmond. That he goes to bed at night thinking, is tonight going to be the night that I finally suffer a break-in? Usually, people who live in Redmond say, whew, I moved away from Seattle, so I don't have to worry about staying up at night wondering whether or not someone's going to break into my home. And now he finds himself in a position that he would have found himself if he stayed in Seattle, if that's where he's from. The Bellevue Police Department says that there are a bunch of burglaries being committed by the same group of people, and it's part of an organized crime ring. And they say it's happening anywhere from Kent to Bellingham. This group is linked to more than 100 burglaries across Western Washington. Those are the only ones that they've been able to link them to. Doesn't mean it's the only ones that they committed, allegedly. And they target homes, they say, Thursday through Sunday between 5 and 9 p.m. It's a four-day workday, or four-day work week.
Yeah, they're putting in hours.
Well, it's only 5 to 9. It's not even a full day.
You work 3 to 7.
Oh, do I only work 3 to 7?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Well, that's what everybody thinks, at least.
Well, they're idiots, then. What time do I get into the office? 7:30, 7:45. No, not that early. That's when I, well, no, that's not when I wake up. That's when I get out of bed. 6. I wake up early, but I get out of bed at 6. They are known, King 5 says, to use surrounding trail systems to enter and leave a neighborhood. They've got a getaway car just waiting for them to get in. They often enter homes through a back door, but have used a second-story window at least one point. I think that story was out of Kirkland.
This indicates a level of sophistication to us that's beyond the normal residential burglaries.
I mean, as you're just going into the back door, it doesn't seem... Is that sophisticated?
Apparently.
Wouldn't you go through the back door if you're going to break into someone's home so that no one sees you?
Either that or like a side window.
Oh, whoa. Then you must be part of a...
Well, you don't knock on the front door.
Yeah.
Can I please break in, sir? Yeah, there you go.
Hey, is anyone home? I'd like to rob you. I suppose
we're not that far away from that, right?
I am going to say, I acknowledge that is an amateur way of breaking into a home. Knocking on the door and saying, I'd like to rob you. Sophisticated. It's not the two creeps from Home Alone. But that voice you just heard, Captain Joe Nault of Bellevue PD. He told King 5 that the crooks generally have a coordinated plan.
They find a trail that leads into a wooded area.
Okay.
That's their escape route. That's where they have vehicles staged. They're fairly brazen. They are not deterred by cameras, but what we've noticed is that they tend to be deterred by audible alarms.
Well, yeah, it's not really deterred is probably the wrong word for that. They just know they have less time to get in and out. A video camera surveillance, that doesn't mean anything to them. Their faces are covered. I've got video. I'll post it on Twitter a little bit later tonight. You can't tell any. They look young-ish, I guess. I don't know. I can't. It's hard to tell. They move like someone is young.
Yeah, that would right? be my best guess based off of the video.
Early 20s, mid-20s.
Yeah, they were wearing like
20s.
Sweatsuits and stuff. Stuff yeah. that young people generally wear.
That's my guess. Can't tell the race. You can tell that they're men. At least I could. But, I mean, nowadays, what is a man? I mean, they were naked from the waist down, but who knows? Who knows nowadays? At one point, when they broke into a home in Mercer Island, they looked directly at the surveillance camera and flipped the bird. because they know that just because they're caught on video, no one's monitoring that in real time, so they still have plenty of time to get in and out.
I thought that was mildly funny.
I mean, it was a little funny, which is also, by the way, a clue to their age.
Yeah,
right? A 47-year-old is not flipping the bird
double
like
bird
that.
With kind of the lean, too.
You know what's funny? All the video, or I saw that photo posted on King, Cairo, and I want to say Como. Why do they blur out the middle finger? Like,
it's offensive.
To who?
I don't know. Are you allowed to?
Do we know what? I'm doing it now.
You're on camera, so.
Yeah, there you go. Don't show the boss. But what is the? We know what they're doing.
Well,
I get
it's
bleeping
just like,
language, but why are you bleeping basically hand
blurring.
Gestures?
Yeah. So I don't know.
People are just annoying. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, you get to pick the story I cover. Story number one, Josh Hawley battles with reporter over Elon Musk tweet, but it escalates to questioning blood alcohol levels. Or death at Seattle encampment raises questions about addressing homelessness in the region. Which story do you want me to cover? You can text in your answer. The story with the most votes, that's the one I cover. It's called You Pick the News. 1-800-465-8770 for your text. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
You pick the topic on The Jason Rant Show.
Indeed you do, and you went with a story from Mediaite about Josh Hawley, who questioned whether or not a journalist was drunk. It was an interview with KSDK's Mark Maxwell. This was the pre-interview exchange over some Twitter rant about Elon Musk. Now, did you see the original tweet? He said, "Does anyone still think Elon buying this site and firing all the experts was a good idea? It's been a while since I've seen any of his bootlickers brag on how efficient the site is now that Sir Galaxy Brain is in charge." I can't. The bootlicker is such a dumb insult. It makes me laugh all the time. I get called that. I used to get called that a lot. I feel like they've stopped using it as much. Kind of like the right has stopped using soy boy and cuck. They used to use that all the time, and the left used to use bootlicker all the time. It's kind of gone away. I'd like to see a resurgence of both, or all three, because it just makes me
laugh. All about having some variety,
right? I just think it's funny that anyone thinks any of that is like you call me a bootlicker. Oh, my God. I can't. I remember you cut me to my core. I just laugh when that happens. Anyway, Josh Hawley got into it with this guy, Mark Maxwell.
You also said that you didn't necessarily do any of this sober. I never said I was sober, you said. I hope you do our interview sober.
I try to. Yeah.
I hope you're sober now. I mean, oh, wow. What's this part about not interrupting a worshiper during their daily prayers to Lord Elon? You posted that, too. Yeah. Something. It's quite a rant. It's quite a little rant.
I refer to it as satire. I hope most people could read it.
Satire? Really?
Yeah, I think that's protected under the First Amendment, is it not?
Oh, well, I don't think you should go to jail for it. I'll admit that. I think we can all agree on that. But I don't know. I mean, referring to people you don't like as bootlickers, I mean, you don't do opinion journalism, do you? I mean, I don't know. You say what you want.
I wouldn't call the tweet an act of journalism.
But you're a journalist on a public forum. This is a free, this is a public platform.
I love, by the way, well, you know, it's Twitter. It's not real life. Dude is a political editor for the station. He's the political editor. You're supposed to be nonpartisan. You're supposed to be objective. Well, just because I'm a partisan on Twitter doesn't mean I'm not a nonpartisan in real life.
I thought you've got a picture of yourself at work on your Twitter profile, right? Isn't that you at KSDK?
It is me, yeah.
And it says Mark Maxwell TV is your handle. That sounds like, that's you as a journalist, right?
My Twitter page fascinating, yeah.
When journalists or so-called journalists refer to people they don't like as bootlickers on a public platform when they attack folks and then say they don't necessarily do stuff sober, it does tend to get my attention. I mean, we give you a lot of access. I just want to make sure that you're actually sober and taking this seriously. Good Lord in heaven.
I'm happy to do a blood alcohol test. I have had no alcohol this morning, and that wasn't a joke. I just want to clarify for you. But,
we'll save the
festivities for this weekend when the St. Patrick's Day festivities kick off. But that'll be off the clock.
Okay. All right. Log off Twitter.
I mean, that last bit of advice is good for everybody. What a weird exchange on so many levels for both of them.
So that was a pre-interview kind of conversation that they were just recording on Holly's side?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, you can record generally pre-interviews are pre-recorded sometimes, I guess. And the fact that it came from Josh Hawley likely indicates that Mark was also doing it, or you just have a rule. So Ben Shapiro, I don't know if he still does this, but Ben, at some point when he was doing interviews with people he knew were far to one side, in fact, when he was up here for a Freedom series, a reporter from The Stranger wanted to do an interview, and Ben said, yeah, that's fine, but just so long as you agree, I can record this so that nothing I say is taken out of context. And he was upfront about that, and I've heard him and seen him do that before. I don't know if he still does it, but that's possible that what Josh Hawley did there, which is, yeah, it's fine, but I'm going to record this just as an FYI. I'm not going to do this in secret. I'm going to record this just in case. I think that that's probably a good strategy. If I did more interviews with people who just don't like me, I probably would do the same. I don't know. It is odd, though, that he released it, and I don't know why he did. That's the part I don't understand. Other than to make a point, which he's in the right. His point is valid. But was there what pushed him into releasing it? He doesn't say. It's weird.
I mean, he obviously doesn't like the guy, right?
Well, no. Does he sound like a likable person?
No.
Okay.
Maybe somebody you'd have a beer with.
No.
That was a joke.
No, I know. I got it.
Yeah. Just like, you got to point out the joke, just like he did.
Joke. Oh, that was, that was a joke. It's also the day today. The drinky day.
St. Patrick's.
That one. Can we say that, or is that cultural appropriation? Don't know. 1-800-465-8774, your texts.